Driving in winter weather is often a challenge. You don't need me to tell you that. It became a bigger challenge last week when the pre-Thanksgiving winter storm snarled traffic around the region. You can't blame people for trying to find ways to drive around the places where the snow blocked roads, but in the narrow valleys in our part of the West, the alternate route is often higher and snowier. GPS map devices often don't indicate that, and so people can end up on roads worse than the roads they avoided. Jackson County's roads and sheriff's departments are warning people not to get too hung up on the advice from the GPS maps. Two guests join us. Mike Moran is with the Jackson County Sheriff's Department. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
You bet. Glad to be here.
And John Viles with us as well, the Jackson County Roads and Parks Manager. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having us.
So what kinds of things did you guys see during the last storm? Why don't we start with you at the sheriff's office, because you're the emergency first responders.
Well, I talked to Sergeant Sean Richards, who's head of our search and rescue. I was thinking about their role. They're kind of like the Coast Guard. They go out in the worst of it. And what happened was he had mentioned that they'd been out overnight and along with the crews from Jackson County Roads. And Jackson County Roads are a lot like the Coast Guard, too. They're out in the worst of it. Essentially, people trying to avoid being caught on this side of the Siskiyous, according to their GPS, looked like an alternate route. Well, as you mentioned, altitude isn't factored in, road conditions, size of the road necessarily. Yeah, there's kind of a road there. 13 people ended up unable to proceed further, I think, was the final count. Is that
Jim? It was. It was 13. It started off to be 3, and then it was 8. But by the time the search and rescue folks got down, there was 13 different vehicles.
This is all on one road?
All on Colstein Road, which starts basically at the summit of the Siskiyou Pass and then proceeds down into Northern California to Hilt.
In a very shadowy place, too, I think, where the snow tends to stick around for a while once it gets there.
It does. And, you know, it's about a 1.5 lane gravel road, very windy, very steep, very remote. And some folks, you know, that showed up on the GPS as a viable route, and it wasn't.
So this is not the first time this sort of thing has happened, though. We have some history in the region of people who look to navigate around obstacles ahead of them, and the maps indicated this is another way to go.
It is. You have this little computer device in your car, and the computer device, you know, if it says this road's closed, then it does what it's programmed to do. It starts looking for alternatives, and it says, well, there's an alternative, and it doesn't know better, and so it'll send there. And if you follow those things blindly, things like this can happen.
Well, there have been some significant cases over the years. We were just talking before we got on the air about the Kim family. We couldn't remember if it was 12 or 13 years ago, getting stuck. Mr. Kim died in the snow. Looking for an alternate route. They got seriously stuck. So it seems like the message would have gotten across by now. But who needs to get it the most, John Vile?
All of us. You know, it's interesting when we were, you know, having this conversation, I talked to some people and some people said, you know, I probably would have done that. And, you know, it makes me shiver to think that, you know, you'd follow this device blindly. But I think being familiar with your surroundings, being familiar with where your destination to and what's around it, and just the idea of getting off of an interstate, going onto a two-lane rural road and then turning onto a 1.5-lane gravel road, something should be going off on your head saying, this is a bad idea. I should probably turn around right now.
As a guy involved with road maintenance, then, I mean, how much more attention is an interstate highway going to get versus a local road?
Well, I mean, for example, Interstate 5 has 24/7 shifts all year round, as much effort as possible. It's what's called a level of service, in that basically all the resources possible are going to be put to that road to keep it passable. Colstein Road is plowed during the day, and we do not show up there at night at all. And so virtually zero attention at nighttime.
So, but that is a county road then, you're saying?
It is a county road, yes. Mm-hmm.
But it also crosses the state line, doesn't it? And your truck stop at the state line?
Yeah. So once it gets to the bottom of the hill down there in Siskiyou County, usually there's not a lot of snow down there, and then Siskiyou County takes it over. The part that's tough to travel is all in Jackson County.
Mm-hmm. So, and no plowing at night, you're saying, at all?
Correct. Yes, we do plow it during the day, and we try to keep it passable. And usually, you know, when we leave in the evening, we're leaving it in good shape. But if it's continuing to snow during the night, it's going to get worse and worse, and then we're going to hit it hard in the morning.
Let me invite our listeners to join us once again, because you may have some stories to share about situations where you thought you were getting ahead of the crowd and ended up getting well behind it. Or maybe you had some success in navigating around it because you had an awesome vehicle or something. Join us with your story at 800. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. John Vile with Jackson County Roads and Parks. Mike Moran with the Jackson County Sheriff's Department. And you can join us as well. 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. I noticed in the release that came out jointly from the Sheriff's Department and Jackson County Roads and Parks that there was also mention of not just passenger vehicles, Mike Moran, but also some larger freight vehicles?
Well, what was happening was, a lot of the semi-trucks were taking alternate routes, and that means going on roads that really are not ideal. And I think John probably knows better than that than I do on how that's supposed to work.
The big challenge we had was it was the same idea. Interstate 5 is closed, and people are trying to find alternative routes. And if you're a long-haul trucker with a delivery due, that starts creating a lot of anxiety. So you try to figure out, how can I get around this? And we had several semis, interstate trucks, divert onto Dead Indian Memorial Road, and which is a length-restricted road because the trucks cannot navigate that road because they're simply too long.
And because they're in tight curves.
And there's some hairpin curves that they can't stay in their lane. They often track off into the ditch. And so that's a length-restricted road. They tried to go, and they simply got hung up, and it closed the road for several hours where they were stuck in the middle of the road, and we had to get tow trucks up there to get them out.
Well, this is a story that we get when people get stuck, even on the main roads too. Is that if cars start spinning out, you really can't do the work of plowing. Can you describe that whole process of getting the road clear enough to be able to clear the road?
You know, I lived this several years ago when this happened on Siskiyou Pass once, and what happened last week in Northern California is the exact scenario. You have this big, long train of vehicles moving down the road. Somebody spins out and everybody stops. Then the snow continues. And then once that vehicle's out of the way, if it gets out of the way, now all the snow's on the ground because the plows haven't been there. If you don't have chains, oftentimes you can't get yourself out. And if it continues to snow, this problem continues to compound. The plows cannot operate. You can't get yourself out. And now you're in the scenario where basically you have to get responders from each end, pull a car out, plow a car's length, pull a car out, and it takes forever.
It took, I think the clothes you're talking about, the Siskiyous, you were working for the state at that time?
I was.
That took about, 24 to 30 hours to clean out, didn't it?
We actually got everybody out of there in less than 24 hours, but it was closed overnight and people did spend the night there. In Northern California, just this last week, it was a much greater problem. There was, thousands of people that spent the night on the freeway under that exact same scenario.
Is that something of a nightmare scenario for somebody in the transportation, particularly in the road maintenance business, to have that much traffic as there was for Thanksgiving and that much weather?
It doesn't get much worse than that. I mean, when you have that scenario where people cannot literally get themselves out of the problem because they didn't have chains, even though the roads, you're required to have chains and you're required to put them on, they can't help themselves and we can't get plows in there. It's a very unsettling feeling because there's just not a lot you can do except do your best, and it's very slow.
So, Mike Moran, tell us about Jackson County Search and Rescue. I mean, how big a team is this, and how often do they mobilize in most situations, and how busy were they through that Thanksgiving holiday travel period?
Well, the big night was the one up in the Colstein Valley, and I don't believe we had necessarily anybody, any big call-outs, but it's a lot of volunteers that can come out and look for people that get stuck or get lost. We happen to have, over the weekend, we have deputies who were assigned to do essentially mountain patrols all when they're during the summer. They're out on the lakes. They're our marine patrol. And so this past weekend, two of the deputies were out. And very fortuitously, one of them, they were, I think, up on Road 37, clearing out those. There were several cars.
Which recently goes north-south of the Cascades.
Right, and it runs from 140 on over to Howard Prairie, which is neat during the summer, but not during the winter. So the deputies had cleared out some vehicles, and they went separate ways back to their respective homes. And Deputy Ian Lance happened to decide to go down Dead Indian Memorial Road. And it was getting near dusk, and found a car that had been literally blown off the road due to the high wind. So there's something. I mean, these folks, I think, were prepared somewhat. They were nearly home, though, about 20 miles from home. And they live in the Ashland area. Had he not come along, very likely they would have had to spend the night. Well, the fuel was running low. Tow trucks that were sent didn't get there for various reasons. Deputy Lance was able to pull them out. So on that particular night, he saved a family of four folks some pretty desperate times. And he just fortuitously was taking that route and said, man, he probably was going to be the last car passing them
right.
for a while.
All right. So he always got help that he stopped and said, hey, how are things going here? And not too well was the answer.
No. And he was able with his larger rig to get them pulled out.
All right,
he didn't get them pulled out with the rig. He tried. Other rigs had tried. I should say with his larger rig, he had enough room for all four family members to get in with him, and he took them home and they went back later.
So at a minimum, what should people be traveling with in the winter in their cars?
Well, a couple of things. I just was thinking about this young lady who joined us for Thanksgiving. She just drove down from Portland. And, you know, a lot of us, I think maybe John has a thought on this too. It seems like the Sextons, we forget that that can be some treacherous driving too. Mm-hmm. When you're thinking I-5 North is usually fine. Don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, but between Grants Pass and Roseburg, you got four significant passes.
It's a little
four
scary.
Four and a half, really, yeah.
So even for that, a couple of the things that I would suggest always having if you're going to take a road trip, even, you know what, you're thinking, oh, I'm I-5, I'm fine, is having some water because if you're trying to dig your car out, you're going to get dehydrated if there's any exertion at all. And you don't think of equating dehydration with being in the snow, but unfortunately, it's a fact if you're exercising or working. So a little bit of dried foods, some energy bars, snacks, things like that, and warmth, whatever, so maybe some extra clothes. And a lot of people think, well, I don't have enough room for that. But bring some blankets, sleeping bags, something that you're prepared if you do. Like this family the other night, they were thinking, hey, we're almost home. And then this wind gust came, and next thing you know, they're stuck. And it could have gone badly because eventually your fuel runs out.
Getting stuck on winter roads, the discussion topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. You're welcome to join as we talk to Mike Moran from the Jackson County Sheriff's Department and John Vile from Jackson County Roads and Parks. 800-838-3760, the phone number, the email address, jx@jeffnet.org. John, the difference between carry chains and put your chains on is what?
So when as you travel in Oregon, you will encounter these signs that say snow zone. And whenever you see the signs that say snow zone, you're required to have chains with you in the wintertime. And the purpose of that is that scenario we talked about. You never know what you're going to encounter, and you need to have chains with you. So if you do encounter something that's problematic, or if the requirements change to where chains are required, you can put them on. When the signs read chains required, and there's different levels, sometimes the trucks have to chain up, sometimes all vehicles have to chain up, then you have to follow that particular standard and put your chains on as required.
Have chains gotten any easier over the years? I mean, I know that lots of people complain about, having to get under the car when the pavement's wet and you got snow around you and all that stuff. Is there anything that's made chaining up a car any easier over the years?
The newer chains are easier to install. It's still no fun, though. I mean, it's still wet and messy and not a lot of fun. In most snow zones, in most areas, the four-wheel drive vehicles, if they're in four-wheel drive and people drive responsibly, can usually get through most areas. You also have the snow tires, which they have the little snowflake on the side, the all-season tire. Those are very good, and those are allowed to be substituted for chains. They have the siping and the more aggressive tread, and those can be substituted for chains as well. So there's some alternatives to chains that can be substituted.
Are there certain tests you recommend people should do to see what the conditions are like around them? I have been in situations where I was driving down the road and I thought, well, this doesn't feel too bad. Then I stepped out of the car and almost fell over because the pavement was too slick to stand on.
One of the things that we always encourage people to do, and the state really encourages this as well, is to practice putting your chains on inside your garage. Because many people have never done it before, and when you're out there on the side of the highway and the cars are flying by and you can barely stand up because it's so slick and you kneel down and you get in that sloppy, wet snow, it's no fun. If you actually know how to do it, it makes it a lot more enjoyable. As far as the standard about when to put them on and everything else, My advice is anytime you feel like you're losing traction, you should put them on. And then anytime that you're asked to put them on. So anytime it says change required, clearly you have to then. But anytime you're not sure, when I was with the state, I worked with a Right-Away Trucking. And Right-Away Trucking had a standard that if one of their truck drivers is involved in an accident and a chains could have prevented it, they're going to be fired, which is a pretty tough standard, but I like the message of the drivers. Get out and put them on before you have a problem, not once you do have a problem.
Well, some of this obviously really gets down to basic psychology. I mean, you're saying, you know, if when conditions get bad, put your chains on, but there's also a decision to be made about whether to continue, which is part of what you're talking about here, Mike Moran, isn't it? I mean, decide whether or not you actually can get to where you're going.
Right. People don't want to be delayed. We're used to, in today's society, not being impeded by anything. And folks don't like to realize that Mother Nature does have the final say in whether you're going to make it on time or not sometimes. So I can just speak from a couple of times where I've I've decided to grab a hotel rather than go through the mountains coming back from Reno once, and it was really a great choice. And then another time, this monster storm was coming, and we're coming back from Montana, and I opted to stay again. And, well, it turned out it wasn't all that bad, but, you know, I'd just rather be feeling secure. And you got responsibilities. You know, it's hard to think at the time, though, that I got to get there. And, you know, we also, just to get back to the GPS thing, the other day I was in Eugene and driving around. I'm in the middle of Eugene it ought to be working pretty well. Well, the GPS sent me down this dead-end driveway that was supposed to be a street. So I thought, okay, reminder again, you can't rely on GPS. You have to. And I looked and I thought, that doesn't look like a street. But I thought, well, no, GPS says. So, you know, I can see where you do get in a mode. And that kind of leads to thinking, well, I've got the clear go-ahead. Somebody's telling me I can do it.
You know, one thing on that mindset when you get in that travel mode that we try to recommend to people is assume the worst. Because people said, well, I'll probably make it. Assume you won't. Instead of assuming it probably won't snow that hard and I'll make it without chains, assume you'll have to put your chains on. Assume you're going to get stopped. Assume you're going to have to spend the night. If you make all those assumptions that the worst is going to happen and you're prepared for that, then when it doesn't happen, it's a great trip. And if it does happen, you're ready.
Are you still scratching your head after all these years in the road business, watching the conditions that people will brave, thinking that they can get through or that they're good enough drivers, for example?
Not only am I scratching my head, I'm scratching my head more because it seems like the problem's expanding. The problem's not getting better. It seems like people are taking more and more chances and are less and less prepared. And so the problem seems to be growing instead of improving.
Any advice back to the people who make the GPS systems? I mean, they have some indication of what road conditions are like on there, yeah?
I don't know, why some of these roads are even put into the GPS. Mm-hmm. It seems like it would be to their benefit or the safety of people that use GPS to send out verifiers during the bad seasons. Easy to drive these roads. I really don't like driving the Colstein mm-hmm. Road even during the summer. Mm-hmm. It's pretty down there, but
not a great road. Yeah,
it's a little conducive to car sickness. It's a long haul.
All right. So question what your GPS is telling you, and particularly if the winter weather is setting, and consider that maybe you won't make it to where you're going and turn around and come back. Mike Moran is with the Jackson County Sheriff's Department. John Viles is the manager of Jackson County Parks and Roads. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. You'll meet Eugene Ballard in hour two coming up.